I'm Nick Mangold, and this is the Jets Blog Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Podcast. I am your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Corey. How you doing? How's your Twitter timeline? It looks like it's been burning up lately.
It is a smoldering pile of Christian Hackenberg's ashes.
Maybe your ashes in 3 years. What do you think about that, Corey?
It might be. Maybe I would happy. Listen, if Christian Hackenberg turns into Tom Brady, I will delete my account. Okay?
Ooh, wow. That's bold.
I will eat a tweet or something. I will do something if Christian Hackenberg makes a Pro Bowl.
I don't think that it's that you're going out on a limb to basically, you know, say Christian Hackenberg's going to be one of the, you know, three greatest quarterbacks of all time. It's not that much of a bet is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'll say, listen, I understand that, you know, I'm not saying I feel dissimilarly to you, but the one nuance I want to put on this is I understand that Christian Hackenberg is going to dominate this 2016 Jets draft 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 10 years from now. He'll be the one that everybody remembers. But there were other good things that happened, and we'll get into some of those. But right, you're right. Christian Hackenberg is going to be the centerpiece for what people think about this draft down the road. So yeah, I think he's going to be what we need to discuss first.
He will. And as you listeners can tell, Brian and I are not the biggest fans of this pick. So we wanted to bring someone on who had more of a neutral view, who had a positive view, who saw the highlight or the good things in the drafting of Christian Hackenberg, or at least in the idea of Hackenberg as a prospect. With that, let's bring on our guest, Eric Galco of Optimum Scouting. Eric, thank you for joining the Jets Blog Podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. What's going on?
Well, we are coming down from the high of the first round. We both like the Duron Lee pick. Then Hackenberg goes 51, and I'm just going to be 100% honest. I hate this pick with every fiber of my being. I hate the timing of it. I hate with the placement on the roster. I hate what it signifies for the regime and as a whole. Are there reasons, whether it's his skill set, whether it's the coaching that he'll receive, whether it's just you have faith in him as what you saw in his freshman year at Penn State, that I should not hate this pick?
Yeah, I think first off, to your point, the fit is certainly unique. So with Bryce Petty there, is he kind of a wasted pick? Is Geno Smith going to be a starter if Patrick's not back? Is it going to be Hackenberg out of the gate? It's a very odd situation for a guy like him to go to, but I think the biggest benefit for Hackenberg is, you know, going back to that freshman year film, which everyone kind of points out, which is, I think, a bit unfair to kind of dismiss 2 years of a guy playing poorly, but that freshman film, he's running Tom Brady's offense mentally and calling audibles and, you know, making decisions pre-snap that most quarterbacks in the NFL aren't doing, especially at 18 years old. So I think the mental stuff is what you really get excited about Hackenberg.
I think that is true, right? No, I'm not debating the fact that he is sharp, that he can pick things up, that he shows a penchant for being able to learn. But my biggest thing is, of all the measurements that people say use to try and project what would be what was a successful college quarterback and then transitioning to a successful pro quarterback. Why do we think that using a second round pick on a guy who hasn't demonstrated those things outside of, you know, one shaky year with Allen Robinson and Jesse James can make it work in the NFL? Like, or how much time is it going to take for him to make it work? If we think he is sharp for those things.
The timing thing is interesting because I heard a lot during the draft, and certainly it's still being discussed, that he needs a lot of time. He's a project. He wasn't drafted to be a project. He's a guy who you expect to run a pro offense immediately in the NFL. Now his placement, his footwork, his mechanics all have kind of gone to crap the last 2 years, and he hasn't developed those, which is very frustrating. But the benefit of Hackenberg, I believe, is that he can handle NFL offense right away, and that part's kind of done for him. So he'll walk into the Jets building. He'll need the 3 months that every rookie needs, but he'll be advanced as far as what he'll know of the offense more than any quarterback in this draft class, and more than any quarterback probably since Andrew Luck coming out of college. But that all said, he's not a guy you want to throw out there to throw the ball because you don't want to develop bad habits. That happened to Mark Sanchez coming out of USC. He was thrust into the fire with the Jets and never really develops that ball placement between zones and really confidence and his mechanics, and that kind of led him to never really develop those skill sets ever. So you don't want that with Hackenberg. But I think the fact that he's so mentally ready that if he had to play as a rookie, he can certainly do it. I think if he plays at the tail end of his rookie year, and the quarterback coaches can really focus on mechanics and footwork and not instilling bad habits, which is a problem that most NFL teams don't do, is they don't develop their quarterbacks really well in those areas in season. But I think if they can do it with Hackenberg, he can play as a rookie. And the promise of him, again, it's going to be that Jay Cutler type ability where you know he has the talent to make all those throws, but he's going to make a handful of bonehead decisions because the mechanics or footwork aren't quite there yet.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is the Jets have spent two, you know, mid-round picks, second and fourth, if you want to call the second round a mid-round pick, on project quarterbacks. But as you mentioned, Hackenberg is a very different project than Bryce Petty was. Bryce Petty was the guy who came out in an article in his rookie, in his training camp of his rookie year admitting that he didn't know what the Mike linebacker was. Hackenberg, on the other hand, operated the Patriots' Tom Brady, Bill O'Brien system as a true freshman at Penn State. The thing that's interesting for me is the Jay Cutler comparisons. And maybe that's because of my bias. I don't perhaps think that Jay Cutler is a good quarterback. On a more philosophical level, is there value in drafting a Jay Cutler just to have someone who is at least teasing you with his physical talent as opposed to, well, I'm worried about these bad traits. Let me stay away from this quarterback in general.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And you can't, you know, as much as Jay Cutler frustrates Denver Broncos fans when he was there, Chicago Bears fans, I think about 20 teams in the league would love to have Jay Cutler on their roster because he has the talent to make remarkable throws. And when he's on, he is one of the top 10 quarterbacks in football. You know, when he's a streaky quarterback, and when he's feeling he's up there. That's what Hackenberg can really add to you. And I think that what he has above Jay Cutler even as a prospect is that he'll be able to do that kind of stuff by the end of his rookie year. And I can't stress that enough, that even Teddy Bridgewater, 2 years in the league, is not doing the kind of things pre-snap, audible control, calling out plays, helping in protections, the way Hackenberg has done already in his college career. And those pro-style dynamics, they don't necessarily mean long-term success, but the fact that he won't have to learn those or adapt to those at all in his rookie year can have him focus on other things. It's kind of like being, you know, the genius slack off in class. He can do all these things he has to do, but if you focus on what's really important, you can get the most out of him. So, and that's kind of what Hackenberg can really be, more so than Jay Cutler, is that he can make the most of his rookie year with the proper focus and coaching and really relying on those things. And the frustrating part of Hackenberg's film is that it's clear he never was developed footwork and mechanically over his career because he's making the same exact footwork issues and mechanical issues he was as a freshman. And you saw him improve over his freshman year watching every game of that season, which I have. And then you see bits and pieces in 2014, 2015 of slight improvement, but it's not all the way followed through yet. I think he just really didn't have accountability and the coaches he was with, and hopefully if the Jets can provide that, again, he could be Jay Cutler at worst, which I think is a pretty awesome floor, and then it could be a lot more after that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the footwork thing, if anybody's watched the Gruden, you know, quarterback camp, one of the things that Gruden points out is, you know, kind of where his foot is, which foot is back on the shotgun snap. And, you know, when he was under Bill O'Brien and then he's under James Franklin and that switches. And then he shows him footage of like whatever the bowl game was. I don't know which bowl game he played in most recently. And he said, Gruden talks about how his foot is back to the way it was when he was under Bill O'Brien, and Gruden asks him about that, and he's like, well, it was kind of the last game, and it was more comfortable for me, and so I just did what I wanted to do, essentially. He, you know, kind of admits to that. So you're right. There is some potential there, right? I would say I think my estimation is it could be that he's the exception, you know, to the rule, you know, in terms of he's going to have to be the exception to the rule to be successful in the NFL. But you're right, he does have some traits. And Eric, I do think it bears mentioning that you were the one who talked us off the ledge on Sheldon Richardson a couple of years ago. So, you know, well, in some ways, you know, I think we'll give you the benefit of the doubt, but we definitely do want to talk about some other guys. What can you tell us about some of the rest of the draft that the Jets had? Were there any other picks that you really liked other than Hackenberg that you thought stood out for one reason or another, like, Darren Lee or Janoris Jenkins or any of the other guys that they picked up in the draft?
Yeah, outside of the Hackenberg pitch, which I'm sure we'll discuss and we'll be continuing to discuss for the next couple of years, I like the Darren Lee pick quite a bit. And at first I was a bit puzzled by it, and certainly the Paxton Lynch interest kind of had me thinking he'd be the 20th overall pick. I think a lot of people believe at the moment. But Todd Bowles wants a guy who can be that kind of situational project guy to develop a defense that's almost like a Deion Buchanan for the Arizona Cardinals, and obviously Bowles' connection to the Cardinals and kind of his philosophies instilled there. I think Lee can be that chess piece for that defense in the defensive backfield or at linebacker. You know, they have a very talented defense. I think when they're all healthy, when they're all on the field, Richardson, Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, the corners that they have as well, it's a talented defense. But I think adding that chess piece of Darren Lee is certainly intriguing. I think adding at outside linebacker with Jordan Jenkins was also a very smart pick. I talked to one scout who felt that Jordan Jenkins was on the same tier as Leonard Floyd as a prospect, granted not the same type of athlete, but he actually compared to how people compared Shane Ray and Marcus Golden a year ago, and how some scouts felt Marcus Golden was a better prospect, and he ended up being a better player as a rookie. So I think that kind of comparison maybe should bring some optimism for the Jets draft overall.
Interesting. Yeah, the linebackers, I'm just happy the Jets have some speed and youth at linebacker for the first time since, mm-hmm. I think, 1993. Moving past the first three rounds, the Jets took a bit of a couple projects, as McKagan apparently tends to do in the late few rounds, if we judge his two drafts. He likes to take size, speed guys in the mid rounds and late rounds, and guys that he and Bowles and the coaching staff will develop. One of those guys is cornerback Justin Burris from North Carolina State. He's got the size that Bowles loves at the position, but I don't think a lot of Jets fans really know who he is or what to expect. What was the scouting report from you on Burris, and how do you see him transitioning to the league?
Yeah, he's a bigger corner and a guy who's very physical, which is certainly always intriguing for a system like Bowles' system. And I actually talked with Lance Zierlein of NFL.com a bit about him as well, because I watched, you know, Burris on film, and I'm thinking, well, this guy is physical and he's tough, but the hip turn's not there and the fluidity's not really there that I want to trust in a quarterback prospect. And I originally gave him kind of an undrafted grade, but in talking with Lance and kind of going back and realizing what we talked about, I think his ability to kind of attack and not lose position is what's important. And it's not always sexy, I think, in the hip turn, which is a bit frustrating. But I think you look back at when the Arizona Cardinals, again, I touched base with them too, when they took Justin Bethel a few years ago, and that's, again, a Todd Bowles pick, or a guy he liked a lot as well. Kind of that same type of athlete where maybe he's a safety, maybe he's a corner, but he's a guy that, although he's not great athletically or hip fluidity-wise, he's speedy enough, he's physical enough, he's powerful enough, I think you can rely on him.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Eric. And that's, I think what I see when I see him is, okay, he's a physical corner. He likes to put his nose in. You know, he relishes run defense. He can play some man. Seems to me like maybe this is the guy that they turn into the complement to Calvin Pryor at the safety position, right? Like maybe in 2 or 3 years, he plays some corner and he plays some defensive back, but in a couple years when they move on from Marcus Gilchrist, he's the guy that moves into that role. So yeah, I do think that, right, I project him as defensive back, maybe starting safety in a couple years, but with some, you know, kind of versatility, as you mentioned. Another guy who interests me a lot, I mean, we can talk about punters all day, of course, but was also their seventh rounder, the wide receiver Chiron Peak. I don't exactly know how to say his name, Chiron Peak, but you know, he comes from Clemson. I think it's easy to say, oh, Clemson, Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, Martavis Bryant. But he goes in the seventh round. He certainly has some of the tools. What did you see when you watched him, and what do you think about what he could potentially be, or maybe not at the pro level?
Yeah. So, I mean, athletically he meets the kind of thresholds you want to have. And I think he's an exciting athlete to kind of develop. And I was a bit on board with him early on, you know, after the testing numbers came out, and kind of watching a bit more on film, thinking, oh, this guy's a mid-round guy. But talking to a few scouts about him, because he got a lot of buzz on the internet and quote-unquote draft Twitter, talk a lot about him. But he's a guy that most scouts I talked to felt he'll never really develop into what you want to do. I think he's a project guy worth taking in day three of the draft for sure, but he's not a guy you want to rely on and say, hey, this guy's going to be a number 1, 2, 3, or 4 receiver for us. I think he's an untapped talent. He doesn't really have a great reason for being untapped, which always concerns me, which guys, if they haven't developed yet in college, why not? I'm not sure why he hasn't really picked up that next level, but I think he's a guy in the seventh round that I think if he's your fifth receiver, you could do a lot worse.
Well, it's a fair point. Fair to point out that a late round pick wide receiver that was a size, height, speed kind of freak was Quincy Enunwa, and the Jets and the coaching staff, Chan Gailey, turned him into a pretty useful piece last year as the season wore on. Eric, we thank you very much for your time. Where can our listeners and the readers of the Jets blog get more scouting report, more information, not just on the Jets prospects, but on the 2016 draft class as a whole, and then turning their attention towards 2017?
Yeah, OptimumScouting.com will have a lot of our post draft stuff. We're actually already starting as of yesterday on 2017 stuff. Genuinely, we also have a mock draft on Sporting News. Of course, 2017 mock drafts are all the rage this week. But I think we'll have a lot more 2017 stuff coming down the pipeline. Not necessarily draft or ranking focus, but a lot of kind of diving deeper into what scouting receivers like or what systems are changing in the NFL. Things of like that nature we're looking into.
Awesome.
Awesome. Eric, thank you very much. Appreciate you taking the time today. Enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy your weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks again.
Very much appreciate Eric joining us. As Brian pointed out earlier in the show, he is the one who talked us down from the Sheldon Richardson ledge, although in hindsight, that was a really stupid ledge to be on. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, the Christian Hackenberg ledge will prove as stupid as Sheldon Richardson, save for the drug suspensions. But we very much appreciate him joining us. I have my own thoughts after talking to him, but I'm curious if talking to Eric and hearing some of his points on the Christian's Hackenberg's pro readiness in terms of the mental side of the game has changed or at least, you know, opened your mind up to the pick at all.
I would say it's opened it a little. I'm certainly still very skeptical. And I think the big thing for me is, right, I'm just looking for indicators, right? I'm not going to stand here and say I've watched every game of his, and you know, and I even what I would be know what I'm looking for if I went back and watched all those games, right? I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is I'm going to use the shorthand methods to try and figure out if this guy is going to be successful. Here are some of the shorthand methods, right? Okay, so he was ranked probably if you aggregate all the people, you know, kind of the top guys, you know, he was starting to fall beyond Cardale Jones, all right, in terms of like the way he was being ranked in terms of quarterback. Gil Brandt, the godfather of modern scouting, thought he should have stayed in school another year, even though he clearly had issues with his head coach in James Franklin. You look at the mock draftable, you look at the physical profiles, just physical profiles. He profiles to someone like a Ryan Tannehill type. Jay Cutler, that's another good comparison, right? I think that was one that was used, and I think Joe Caparoso has used that too, right? So that's okay. So, you know, at least we're starting to get a sense of what this guy is or isn't. He was given an undrafted grade according to Pro Football Focus. Go to Football Outsiders, their QBase, which is basically taking college numbers and trying to project it into the pros. The best comps that he had, according to QBase, was Brock Huard and Kyle Bowler. All right, that's what we're talking about here. So, so Brian, that's all numbers, that's all metrics. What are you doing, right? Okay, go to Bob McGinn's column, who he's amazing for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I'm going to take just one quote out of this. I'll use one from there, and then I can give you one from Daniel Jeremiah if you care to. But basically it says, here's a quote from a scout. People can make every excuse in the book for him, but he just hasn't done it, another scout said. He was Bill O'Brien guy, and he had some issues with Franklin. He hangs out more with the managers than he does the teammates. It tells me he likes to be the king of the little people rather than the king of the big people. And then this other one, this is from that same article, not the Daniel Jeremiah one. Sorry, this is better. He doesn't have a clock in his head, said a third scout. I understand they had a poor offensive line, but that's too many sacks. Throw the ball away. Do something. He has talent, but he scares the hell out of me. Right? So it's like, it's this sense of like, it's just beyond grasp, right? It's there. We see it. Kyle Bowler was one of the best, you know, prospects coming into the NFL, right? In terms of, oh, he can throw the ball through the uprights from his knees from the 50-yard line. We'll have that work out for him. So I can see all the stuff, right? I see the potential. I just don't know if it can crystallize for him. And I don't know that my opinion has changed.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is you can. So, all right. So I'm going to use a comparison, not in terms of skill set, but in terms of, so one of the things that Eric brought up was how well-versed Christian Hackenberg is in the mental side in terms of preparation, in terms of understanding a playbook, in terms of understanding professional calls and all that goes into it, in terms of actually calling a game on the field. That's fine. You know, he was doing a lot of pre-snap reads in his freshman year. I get that. But one of the things that changes for me with Hackenberg is when the ball is snapped and when you look at someone like Andy Dalton in his first couple years, you know, Andy Dalton became a master at the pre-snap. But one of the things that held him back, besides some physical limitations, was when the ball was snapped, his head went haywire. And the pressure got to him, and he made bad decisions, and his footwork was sloppy. And look, Andy Dalton developed. Hugh Jackson helped Andy Dalton become a top 12 quarterback, top 14 mm-hmm. quarterback in the NFL last year. I don't yes. know if that's going to sustain, but the coaching of Hugh Jackson helped secure that year for Andy Dalton. Maybe Chan Gailey, with a year and a half, 2 years, can do that for Christian Hackenberg. Maybe he can harness that physical ability. But skittish, scatterbrained, inaccurate quarterbacks who struggle with pressure don't become Pro Bowlers at the NFL normally. You know, no. Those traits don't change. And if you're going to take a project, you're going to take a project quarterback every year, if you're going to go full Ron Wolf, okay. But don't take it at 51.
Yeah, do it in the fifth round. Do it in the fourth round. Do it in the seventh round. Right.
Don't do it at 51. And my guess is, look, McKagan can sit here and tell me all he wants that he wanted to trade down. If he wanted to trade down, he could have. He didn't have to take Hackenberg at 51. My guess is they had a good intel that if they didn't take Hackenberg there, they weren't going to get him in the third round or even earlier, later in the second. Mm-hmm. But I just don't understand taking that project quarterback at 51. And what does it say about the project quarterback that you took in the fourth round last year that you're now giving up on, essentially, because you just have a new toy?
Yeah, I certainly think that, you know, we can read into what the team thinks about Bryce Petty by what we've seen them do. I 100% agree on that. And I'll say, I mean, I watched Bryce Petty pretty intently last summer, and I did not like what I see. Now, obviously, that was almost 12 months ago, but I just looked at that and I said, oh, there's a long way to go here. So they might have already chalked it up, and he's not going to make it out of camp. Maybe I'm wrong. I certainly don't think they're going to carry four quarterbacks this year. I just don't think that's going to happen. Something's going to have to give. And you know, if Ryan Fitzpatrick comes back, you know, something's going to have to give. But right, I look at all the needs that the team has, and I look at, you know, okay,
yeah, that's the real problem.
Right. I get that, you know, the Patriots, and the Patriots aren't the best drafters in the world ever, right? I mean, they're really not. They're pretty terrible at some of the picks they've made over their history for all the accolades they get for all they do. And I mean, they've built a good team, but you know, they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo a couple years. In the second round, I think they drafted Jacoby Brissett in the third round this year. They have the luxury to do that because, number one, Tom Brady's probably, you know, in the last 5 years, 3 years of his career, and they need to start looking ahead. And they have a good enough team that they can kind of afford that luxury. I think Mike Maccagnan is a great GM. I think he's done some great job at evaluating talent, of bringing in players, of using the money that's allocated to him. He's taken some strong arm tactics with players that, you know, maybe they just can't re-sign, and he's just going to get as much out of Muhammad Wilkerson as he can. I think he's a really good GM, but I just see this as a luxury pick, and I just wish that that it wasn't made, right? So that we don't have this temptation to, like, make this guy the franchise quarterback in 2 years, that he's just a tackle, right? And then we don't have to have this conversation.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that we're talking about offline before we started recording, is this idea that there are only two extremes of judging Mike Maccagnan. And it's a problem that's not just judging Mike Maccagnan, it's an extremes of judging sports in general. You either are all in or you're all out, and you can call it the first takeification of sports analysis, but there's no room for gray area anymore. There's no room for nuance and details and subtlety. Dealing with Mike Maccagnan's first, you know, two drafts, first two off seasons, first one season, that makes no sense. Anyway, my point being that you can't just go one way or the other with it.
Right.
You have to find some room in the middle. I can look at Mike Maccagnan and look at a lot of what he's done and appreciate it and understand that he's done some very good things, and like the way he handled a very tough Ryan Fitzpatrick situation, and like the way he handled a very tough Muhammad Wilkerson situation, and like the contracts in hindsight that he gave out last year because of the way they're structured and the future flexibility that it gives him. And I can also look at him and go, what the F were you thinking taking Christian Hackenberg at 51, you freaking idiot?
Yeah.
So yeah. Go ahead.
To me, I would just say, all right, it's a bold move. I'm not saying I don't think he understands what he did. I think he very much understands that he's making a calculated risk here, that he's making a gamble. But I think he feels like it's a pretty confident gamble, right? I don't know that it's a confident gamble. It's like when you're in Vegas and you're at the craps table and someone, bets eight the hard way and you're like, you're an idiot. And then eight the hard way comes up and, they just got a huge odds in their favor windfall. Yeah. And so I think it's one of those things where you see someone do that and you say, that's a dumb move, but then it works out for them. And you say, well, yeah, good for them, I guess. But
maybe he's a genius. Maybe he just knows better than all of us.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think he took a calculated risk, and he understands that if this works out for me, this is a force multiplier for this team, right? And it really is. But at the same time, it's got to work out, right? And maybe all he invests is a second round pick, but there's a lot of expectation that comes with it. Just ask GM John Idzik about his Geno Smith pick, right? That's all we need to do.
No, it's 100% fair. And I hope that Eric balanced this conversation out a little bit. I know Brian and I are overtly negative about this pick and this decision and where it came and how it came. And I think next week we'll have a more overarching, well-rounded conversation of the draft as a whole, because rookie minicamp will be in effect, and we'll get to see these kids on the field and see how they react to NFL schemes and NFL concepts. And we'll, talk a little bit more optimistically or progressively and project forward a little bit rather than the hindsight looking back. We want to thank Eric Galco for coming on. Make sure you guys check him out at optimumscouting.com. Also, make sure you check out Brian. I know that he is working on a Christian Hackenberg opus that will one day hit the interwebs and be seen by the public eye.
Right.
Until then, follow him on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And burn up Corey's timeline at Corey Griffin NBC on Twitter.
Folks, we very much thank you for joining us. A little reminder, we've said this the last couple episodes, but I wanted to keep bringing it up. If you like this podcast, if you like SNY podcasts, any of them, if you're a fan of the Mets, the Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, college basketball or recruiting, you can get all of these podcasts in the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes. You can also find it wherever you listen to your podcast. I listen to Downcast. It's on there. That's the SNY.TV audio network. Just make sure that you go on iTunes and rate and review the channel so that more people can see it, more people can find this. And then eventually Brian and I will get that Beat sponsorship and we'll get our fancy headphones that we've been angling for around now. I think eventually Beats will figure out that we exist, and then those headphones will magically appear in my mailbox. Also, if you are an Islanders fan and you are listening to this show, make sure you check out to this week's Point Blank podcast as the Islanders playoff series continues against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which I should also mention you can watch on the NBC family of networks. You can either watch on Live Extra, NBCSN. I think one game is on USA. So just keep your eye out all sorts of different places where you can watch hockey. That's my company man spiel. Until next time, folks, keep calm and jet on.
Hack attack.
This has been the Jets Blog Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.